Hey guys, I'm your host, Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to this week's episode of Koobana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet. Bankai, Baffling Japanese Internet Mysteries Volume 3 is now out. If you enjoy the particular mysteries that only the internet can offer, then do head over and check it out on Amazon right now. We also have a brand new design up in the Koobana merchandise store. You can check that out at koobana.store. We have shirts, mugs, stickers, masks, and much more, so do check it out and help support the show at the same time. This week, we're taking a look at some tales of the supernatural coming back to haunt numerous people, suspecting or otherwise. First up, what starts out as a rather familiar urban legend soon takes a potentially deadly twist. Find out why in Book of Malice. I've loved scary stories ever since I was in elementary school, so I've collected all sorts of information from various people and things. When I was in school, I heard a rumor from a friend of a story that I would absolutely regret if I were to ever hear it. "Well, who knows it?" I asked him, and he said that our homeroom teacher would tell me if I asked him, so I went over to the staff room right away to ask him about it. At first, my teacher refused to engage and wouldn't tell me the story. But I pestered him so much that, in the end, he told me he'd give me just a hint, and that was it. Shortly after I transferred to this school, I was doing some work in the classroom after school. But one of the teachers told me a story about the library next to the classroom, and so, after that, I decided to do my work in the staff room after school instead. "Why?" I asked. "I can't say why. At any rate, something terrifying happened in that library." And the teacher never told me anything more than that. When I graduated from elementary school and started junior high, I asked one of my friends from the same elementary school about that library. "The library? Ah, that. Back in the day, you could only lock that room from the outside. But now you can lock it from the inside too, right? Well, there's a reason for that. Before the summer holidays, there was a girl who was absorbed in some book that she was reading in the library. Nobody ever uses the library during summer, right? So the security guard came to lock the door. He looked inside and didn't see anyone, and so he locked it. But that girl was still in there, hidden behind a pillar. But she was so absorbed in her book that she didn't even notice the door had been locked. She didn't realize until she was finished reading, and by that point, the sun had long gone down. Her parents were concerned that it was so late and she hadn't come home yet, so they went to the police, but nobody actually thought she might still be in the school library. And so, nobody knew whether she was involved in an accident or some other crime. And when the summer holidays ended and the guard opened the library door, they finally found her. Or rather, her decomposing corpse. After hearing this from my friend, I had a strange thought. How did he know so much about this story? And so I asked him about it. "Well, there's more to the story," he said. "Humans can't live without food or water, or they soon die, right? What do you think that girl did before she died?" "Well, she wrote a Book of Malice. She wrote in that book she was reading with a pencil about everything that happened right up until her death, in full detail. She wrote in tiny letters in the spaces. And apparently, that book is still in the library, even now. You're probably wondering what she was thinking at the time, right? Well, she had no idea who locked her in the library, so she really hated the person who did that to her. That's why she wrote this right at the end of her book. Whoever reads this, please kill whoever locked me in here in my stead. If you don't, then I will kill you in your dreams." Having heard that much, I asked him if he'd actually read the Book of Malice. "No, not me. I heard this from one of the older guys. But apparently the curse can spread even just by hearing about it. And Now I'm safe." He looked at me with a satisfied grin on his face. And at that moment, I finally understood why it was a story I would regret hearing. And at the time, I fully believed it, so I spread the story to anyone around me who would listen. As you may well be aware, trees are considered to be sacred across Japan, and you never know what may or may not be residing in one. Surely that makes tree cutting a dangerous business then, right? This young man in the next story would certainly agree. Find out why in The Girl in the Tree. One of my friends once asked me to cut down some trees on an empty lot. According to him, they were soon going to build a large factory and that area was to become a parking lot. I ran my own business at the time cutting down trees, and so my friend thought it would be nice to ask me to do the job. We had known each other since high school, and he was a landowner in the area from a rich family. He had taken over the family business and now dealt with rent and management. It was still only May when he asked me to head out and cut the trees down, but I remember that it was unusually hot and humid, like it was midsummer. I wiped my pouring sweat with a towel as I cut the trees, and then, out of the corner of my eye, I thought I saw a young girl. But when I looked around, I was all alone. "It's so hot that I must be imagining things," I thought, and continued my work. It was a large tree, so it took me several days of work, but I was able to finish it on schedule. And then I went out for drinks with my friend, before returning to my apartment where I lived alone. Perhaps I was tired because I fell asleep as soon as I hit the bed with the lights still on. I woke up suddenly in the middle of the night and then went to the kitchen to get a drink of water. The lights in the room suddenly flickered, and a strange chill came over me. Then, in the corner of the room, a small girl suddenly appeared. She looked to be about elementary school aged. She was lying down, so I couldn't see her face, but I was so surprised that I didn't react at all. "Why did you cut it down?" the girl said. "Eh?" I had no idea what she was talking about, and it took everything I had to answer with that. "Why did you cut the tree down?" Hearing that, I suddenly remembered the girl I thought I saw just for a moment when I was cutting the tree down. I thought I might be dreaming, but I was clearly awake, and I was covered in a cold sweat. "Have I done something I shouldn't have?" I thought, but I also had no idea what to do now. "My friend asked me to cut it down. That's why," I answered nervously. "I see," she said, and then suddenly disappeared. What on earth was that? Unsure, I drank some water to calm myself down and then climbed back into bed, but I struggled to fall asleep. Finally, as I was beginning to doze around dawn, my phone suddenly rang. It was from my friend, the one who asked me to cut that tree down. "I'm heading over to your place right now, so don't go anywhere." He sounded different to usual, and I was sure that it had something to do with the strange thing that had just happened to me as well. Unable to wait, I stood around out the front of my apartment to kill time. A short while later, my friend arrived with his father in their car. His father drove while my friend sat in the back seat, his face pale. I got in and they took off. My friend explained everything that was going on as his father drove. According to him, when he woke up, that strange girl was standing by his bedside. "Did you cut the tree down? Why did you cut it down?" she asked him. Her face was hidden in the darkness, but she got her point across through her tone of voice. My friend jumped out of bed and ran straight to his father's room. When he told him what had just happened, his father guessed what was going on, grabbed a charm from his room, and they made their way straight over to my place. I asked what we were going to do now, and he said we were going to pick up a Shinto priest and take him back to the site to perform a cleansing ceremony. We picked up the priest, told him what was happening, and he said it was common for spirits to reside in large trees. This is especially true for long-lived trees and such, and if their environment suddenly changes without notice, then that spirit will have nowhere to go and might get violent. And so, that meant the tree I cut down was inhabited by a spirit. My friend's father, who had been a landowner for many long years, immediately knew what was going on when he heard. When we arrived at the spot where the tree had been cut down, the priest immediately set to work. At the time, I felt more guilty than I did afraid. I had cut down a tree where a spirit lived, after all. I put my hands together and prayed as hard as I could. My friend and I arranged to have a tree planted in the corner of the parking lot, which wasn't part of the original plans. And while I'm not a very religious person, I've made it a point to always pray before I cut trees down now. This next story features a countryside town that is slowly developing into a city as the years go on, but for some reason, there's one lot of land that remains untouched. It's an old, run-down park, and it stands out like a sore thumb, so why does nobody want to touch it? Find out in The Desolate Park. I grew up in the countryside, but year after year it was slowly developed, and recently a large shopping mall was even built there. But there's still a lot of undeveloped land, so nowadays it's a mix of both city and countryside. For those who have lived here a long time and understand how it has changed over the years, it won't feel that strange, but for newcomers it might seem a little odd, like, why is it so different across the street? Anyway, there is this one empty lot alone that has never been touched. I've lived in the area a long time, and even I wonder about that place. And so do others. That lot is a desolate park, a little south of the centre of the newly developed area. The equipment in this park was rusty, and sometimes small children played there, but because there was another bigger, much nicer park nearby, there wasn't much demand for it. It didn't fit the city landscape as it was being developed, and if you want to put it in layman's terms, then the space was big enough to fit a single convenience store too. It was unnecessary, and I figured it would soon disappear. But as the years went by, strangely, it always remained. So one day, I was showing my friend from another prefecture around my hometown. Of course, when he spotted that park, he was like, what's with that? It's been there forever, and I don't know why it's still there, I said. My friend then ran over to check it out. I followed him, and we both entered the lot. It was my first time stepping foot in that park, and it looked nicer than it did from the outside. And although it wasn't exactly user-friendly, it had this nice, old-fashioned calmness to it, and it was like I could understand why it hadn't yet been touched. As for my friend, well, he was excited about something and playing on all the equipment. Then, probably because he was an adult playing on children's toys, or perhaps because it was so old, but either way, the swing he was on broke. But not even that dampened his excitement, and he continued laughing even as he tried to leave the park. Of course, I didn't feel right leaving things as they were, and although I knew it was impossible, I tried to somehow fix the swing anyway. Then the air around me suddenly grew cold. It was early summer, and my ears started ringing too. In the end, there was nothing I could do about the swing, and as I gave up and went to leave the park, it felt like something grabbed my left arm. I turned around, but of course nobody was there. There was a tree next to me, so I figured that maybe my clothes got caught on a branch or something. That night, I took a bath after I got home and found a faint bruise on my left arm. I wondered if maybe I'd bumped it somewhere, or if it was sunburn, but I figured it would disappear soon enough and didn't think much more of it. But with every few days that passed, the mark got more and more noticeable, to the point where it was so bad that I had to wear long sleeves to hide it. I had no idea that a bruise could be that strong. When I was talking to my friend on the phone a few days later, I mentioned the mark on my arm. "Ah, I have one too," he screamed unexpectedly. When he looked down at his left arm, there it was, a clear mark that looked like a bruise, just like mine. For me, it was just a bruise, but for my friend, he said his left shoulder was getting heavier and heavier, and he injured his left arm in an accident with a cyclist that saw him taken to the hospital. What on earth is it? My friend and I searched for something we had in common, like trying to solve a riddle, and we realized that before we got the marks, we had played at that park. When we looked back over what we did that day, naturally talk moved to the park. I grew scared and hung up the phone, and then asked my parents if they knew anything about that park. Come to think of it, there was a kid who had a big accident on the swings there long ago, they said. I knew there was something off about that place. I called my friend again and said, "Let's go back to that park one more time." I didn't know what we could do, but we had to go back there. That was how I felt, and we agreed to go back in 2 weeks' time. But strangely, the mark on my arm started to gradually fade, and 2 weeks later, it had entirely disappeared. I wondered what on earth was going on, but when my friend and I went back to the park, as we agreed, we found that it was gone, and that they had started developing it into something else. Every single piece of equipment there had been removed. We spoke to the workers, and they said that construction on the land had started 2 weeks earlier. But, one after the other, people were getting sick or injured, so they weren't making much progress, and it seemed like it was going to take them longer than expected to finish. Maybe my friend and I got those marks as punishment for breaking the park equipment, but then, once construction in the area began, the targets changed, and our marks disappeared. That was the rather supernatural conclusion I reached, anyway. The kids in this next story love riding their bikes to faraway places to find new parks to play. But when they ride a little too far, well, they end up with more than they bargained for. Find out why in The Mysterious Pursuer. This is something I experienced when I was 12 years old. I loved to play outside with my friends, and every day I rode to all sorts of faraway places with them. We'd find all these nice parks and play there, repeating the same thing over and over. One day, the weather was pretty good, so we got to talking about going somewhere even further than usual. I jumped on my bike and pedaled for about 2 hours with my friends M-kun and K-kun. We found ourselves in a completely unfamiliar area, and we decided to stop there so we didn't get lost. We got off our bikes and the three of us looked for a park. We found not a park, but a deserted clearing, so we decided to sit there and play cards. There was a forest at the other side of the clearing, but we didn't know the area, so we didn't exactly want to go in there. Before long, I heard a sound coming from the forest. "Do you guys hear something over there?" I asked the other two, and it seemed they had heard the same thing. We listened closer, and the sound seemed to be gradually approaching us. It sounded just like a bell. I was glad we figured that out, but whoever it was coming towards us might get angry at us. And so, as we were getting ready to go, someone in tattered clothing came rustling out of the trees. You could see at a glance that his hair hadn't been washed for a long time, and it was so long that we couldn't see his face. His torn clothes were also covered in numerous rusty bells, and it was clear that something wasn't right with him. That moment was the first time I ever experienced being so afraid that my body refused to move. "Let's get out of here!" Emkun screamed the very next moment, and when I heard his voice, my body kicked into gear again and we ran for the bikes. The bellman continued approaching, like he had some business with us, and his unexpected speed terrified me. Even as we pedaled as fast as we could still hear the bells ringing right behind us. I almost wet myself in fear. Since we were in an unfamiliar spot and we'd run away so quickly, we now found ourselves lost and unsure of the way home. But still, we were relieved that we could no longer hear the bells. Oh, that was close. Who the hell was that? In the end, we were able to safely return home by asking people on the street and using the street signs. I went cycling with a different friend after that. I was a little nervous about going somewhere far from home again, so we played in the park that was on the edge of our hometown. That was when I heard it. The sound of bells ringing. "Quick! On your bike and run!" I screamed to my friend suddenly. I didn't see the bellman, but I had no doubt that he was coming after me. When I spoke to my friends at school the next day about it, Emkun and Kaykun said they heard the bells in completely different places as well. Nothing happened after that, but I still have no idea who or what that man was. For our final story this week, a young man comes from a village with a rather unique superstition when it comes to Obon. Not only are people not allowed to go near the ocean, but they aren't allowed to go near the mountains either. Why? And what happens if you do? Well, find out in Punishment for Making Fun of the Obon Taboo. This story happened during the Obon holidays in 2006, but it was a super scary experience for me, so if you'd like, let me tell you about it. In my family, or region, it's a basic rule that you never approach the ocean or mountains during Obon, and so, ever since I was a child, I'd never gone near them during that time period. It was my grandparents' generation that insisted upon this, but my parents' generation were never especially fussy about it. However, when I was in the fourth grade of elementary school, I became afraid when I saw some older folks yelling at two of the older kids who had gone into the mountains during Obon. And so, during those holidays, the only time I went outside was to visit my relatives' houses or go to the cemetery. Up until junior high, I thought Obon was simply visiting graves and Buddhist altars. When I started high school in the city, I was surprised to learn that other people had no problem swimming at the beach, even during Obon. Not long after the summer holiday started that year, I got a message from one of my friends. He wanted to go camping near the ocean during Obon. Up until that point, I hadn't once ever enjoyed Obon because of our family's superstitions, so I was like, "Damn you, crazy old folk!" And so, I quickly replied with an, "Okay." I knew my grandparents would be furious if they found out, so I didn't even tell my parents the truth. I'm having a barbecue at a friend's house in the city. I'll take the last train back. I'll probably be home around 11, I lied. I figured everything would be okay if I called them around 11 to tell them that I missed the final train and I was going to spend the night in a family restaurant instead. It would be unlikely for my parents to offer to pick me up in the city because they would likely be drinking for the holiday. On the day, my friend's brother, a university student, drove us to some camping grounds run by the town next to the beach. There were five of us, including my friend and his brother. After we were done setting up the tent, we went swimming at the beach. There were people everywhere. I was so annoyed at my family for telling me all those years that I wasn't supposed to go swimming during Obon. Although, something strange did happen. There was a clump of seaweed that, no matter how you looked at it, looked like a clump of long hair. And this old guy wearing a tank top in the water suddenly dove under the surface but then never came back up. We also took a photo to remember the occasion in front of our tent later on, but it looked like there were faces on all of our knees, and one person looked oddly pale as well. These weren't the only weird things that happened, but they were the type of things that you could just write off as your imagination. The sun was still high in the sky, but we returned to the campgrounds around 5 p.m. and had a barbecue. As we ate, we talked about what to do next. As expected, everyone wanted to go out and do a test of courage. We decided to visit a shrine that was about halfway up a 1,000 meter high mountain. This mountain was apparently pretty famous for climbers. I'd never heard of the shrine, but it was apparently famous amongst delinquents from the university. Apparently, a runner died for some reason on a nearby mountain pass there. We told scary stories, mostly my friend's older brother's experiences, on the drive over. And, on the way, some truly strange things happened. His car stalled, despite being an auto transmission, and as we drove along the mountain road, we saw a light in the distance that looked about the size of a torch, and although it seemed to be coming closer, in the end, we never passed anyone, and it was a straight road with no turns. And when we pulled over on the side of the road to check where we were on the map, all the street lights suddenly went out at once. For some reason, everyone, including me, was more excited than afraid. But it was a strange excitement, like, not like we were actually having fun, but rather, we were acting up because everything was so frightening. How can I put it? It's difficult to put into words, but kinda like every hair on our bodies was standing on end, you know? The tension in the air was weird, like if something suddenly happened, then everyone in the car would instantly turn from laughing to beating each other to death. Anyway, we finally arrived at our destination. There was a dam next to the parking lot, and we had to walk about halfway around it to reach the mountain trail. Looking back on it now, it was late at night, probably around 10 p.m, so I don't know why we didn't park the car closer to the trail. There was nothing else but mountains ahead of us. But at the time, nobody seemed to care, including me. What stood out to me the most was that everyone was grinning eerily. Nobody was telling any jokes. Nobody was even talking. There was nothing to be laughing about. All we were doing was following my friend's older brother, and yet, for some reason, I was excessively happy. I think I was probably laughing. We arrived at the trail entrance, but everyone turned up it without stopping. And before long, I could hear somebody laughing. It was like somebody was trying to stop the sound from escaping, but it was leaking out regardless. Thinking about it now, it was honestly creepy and terrifying. But at the same time, I was probably laughing as well. Scary. By the time we arrived at the shrine, everyone was laughing out loud. When I think back on it, it was like everyone was coughing as they laughed. Tears were streaming down my face, despite the fact I was happy beyond words, and I seemed to be suffering from mild breathing difficulties too. As we passed through the shrine gate, we all continued in different directions at once. I wandered around the shrine grounds for a while, before I stumbled upon a small pond, or moat. So I crouched at its edge. I think, for some reason, that it was really fun watching my tears fall into the water below. "Hey! This way!" My friend's brother screamed happily from the middle of the shrine grounds. The moment I heard his voice, the pleasant feeling I'd had up until that moment suddenly changed. Everything felt like, whatever. I don't care. This is so annoying now. Guess I have to go, I thought. And the closer I got, the sadder I felt. I was probably sobbing by the time I got there. My friend's brother, bathed in torchlight, smiled brightly at us. In his hand, he held a rotting piece of sacred rope. I think everybody else was crying too. Something suddenly vibrated. "You have received a call. Who was on the other end of the line? An acquaintance of the owner of this phone? Or someone else entirely? If you press 184. My phone started talking in a loud voice. For a moment I was confused, and then the surprise came a beat later. I fell backwards on my butt. At the same time, I remembered something very important. It was 11 p.m. I had to call my parents. I looked around and my friend was on the ground next to me as well. Our eyes met and he was like, "That was you? What the hell?" It scared the crap out of me. And as for his brother, he was still holding the rope and whispering something. But either way, my friend and I realized that something strange was going on, and so we shook our other three friends. We shook his brother too, but he was still clenching the rope and acting weird. At any rate, we decided to go back to the parking lot, even if that meant dragging his brother the whole way back. I grabbed the rope and pulled him along, and he followed more easily than I expected. Maybe he was actually of a clear mind at the time. I don't really remember. He acted up once and sent his brother tumbling to the ground, but at any rate, we got him back to the parking lot. Once he was back in the car, he was back to his usual self, other than the occasional violent hiccups. "I have no idea, but what the hell just happened?" he said. Anyway, we decided to go to a family restaurant about 30 minutes away. We were a little worried his brother might start acting weird again, but nobody else had a license, so we tried to at least distract him by singing some upbeat songs in the car as he drove. We arrived at the restaurant a little before midnight, and it was still full of people. After entering and sitting down, I got a call. It was from my mother. I had entirely forgotten to call her. "It's after 11 and you're not home, and we couldn't get through to you either. What the hell is wrong with you?" she said, getting angry at me. She apparently called my friend's house and they told her that we went to the beach to go camping. So she already knew that I was lying to them. And it seemed my grandma was pissed as well. I was unexpectedly calm at the time, and they still hadn't found out that we visited the mountain for a test of courage. My grandparents would absolutely lose it, or maybe even die of shock if they knew, so I decided not to say anything. Instead, I think I told them that we were killing time at a restaurant because the people next to us at the campgrounds were weirdos or something like that. In the end, I got permission to stay until noon the following day, considering that we had to clean up the camping area and all. I later heard from my father that my grandmother was angry beyond words, and she screamed, "He can do whatever the hell he wants," as she stormed back to her room. Apparently, it was the first time my father had ever seen her get that angry. We were all frightened, but for some reason, we all naturally fell into talking about what had just happened. The following conversation is just what I remember, so it might have been slightly different in reality. At first, it was something like, "Seriously, what the hell happened? Was it like some sort of group hypnosis? Isn't that like Kokuri-san or something? Holy crap!" But then... But I was fully conscious the whole time. It was like I was spaced out and I couldn't go against the flow. And when you shook me, that flow suddenly disappeared. When we shook you, did anything happen? Someone asked my friend's brother. I was awake from beginning to end. I was just acting. How was I? Surprising, right? There's no such thing as ghosts, you morons. You all good now? Let's go back there again. Back to that same shrine, he said. We were pissed. Huh? You were acting? Get off it. We were all aware at the time that something wasn't quite right, so we got even more scared, and thus, even more angry. Sorry, my bad. But anyway, let's go back there again. I won't screw around this time. Let's go back. Come on. Hey, we really should go back there again. We're absolutely not going back, everyone said. Let's go. You're all pussies. Who the hell gets scared by something like that? Let's just go back and get it all over with. He kept saying that he wanted to go back, over and over, and the way he kept extending the end of his words honestly stood out to me. He was kind of creeping us out. Even if he was just playing around, it was still too weird. And my friend, who was sitting next to me, almost in tears, poked my side and put his arm out. It was covered in long, deep scratches from fingernails. There was so much blood that I wondered how I hadn't seen it before then. Would his older brother really go that far with his act? He pointed to his shin, and he was bleeding there as well. No, his brother wasn't acting at all. He really had lost it. Let's go! Come on! You'll understand once we get there, his brother said again. We ignored him and decided that first thing in the morning, we would visit a temple. Maybe because I was tired, or maybe I was relieved that everything was so busy around us, but I was suddenly overcome with drowsiness. My friend seemed to notice and said, I'll watch my brother, so you guys can sleep if you want. Unable to bear it any longer, I soon passed out. One of the restaurant staff woke me up. It seemed everyone was asleep. Even my friend's problematic brother. I woke everyone up in front of the staff, and his brother was back to normal as well. He apparently didn't remember much of the day before, other than how incredibly happy he felt. After finding the rope at the shrine, he didn't remember much, and he apparently didn't remember calling us all over either. But although he didn't remember much, he did remember some great feeling of accomplishment, like he finally did it, whatever it was. We left the restaurant around 6 a.m, once the sun had risen quite a bit. We wanted to head straight to the temple first thing, but my friend's brother said, it's too early and I don't know this area so well, so let's visit Nani Nani instead. I think he said the name of a famous temple from his hometown or something. Either way, we went back to the campgrounds first to pack up the tent and such. As we were putting away the tent, I got a call from my mother. Your father and I are going to have breakfast at a coffee shop near the campgrounds, so we'll pick you up. Are you done? Call me when you are, she said. I wanted to go to the temple with the others to be purified, but if I told her that, she'd ask me why, and I'd have to explain. I didn't want her to find out what we'd done. Once we were done packing everything up, my parents came to pick me up and I left with them. Both my parents were from the same village, so they both grew up being told never to go near the ocean or mountains during Obon. They were apparently rather worried about me. Plus, the way my grandmother was acting was unusual, so they decided to pick me up directly. When we got home, my grandparents let me have it. They only yelled at me, but They were so angry that it seemed like they might hit me at any moment. "Lying is the absolute worst," they said. "All those years of warning you, and you still went to the beach. You betrayed us." They told me I had to pray for the entire day. I did as they said, and then my parents joined me as well. At first, I thought they were doing this for my benefit, but as more and more time passed, they showed no signs of leaving the room either. "That's enough," I said to them. "I'm grateful, but I'm fine. I can do this alone." "We had to drive to the beach to pick you up, didn't we? That's why we have to read these sutras the entire day as well," they replied. I got chills when I heard that. My parents were only at the campground for a short amount of time, and you couldn't even see the water from there. If that alone was enough, then... Suddenly, I grew very worried. Was that terrifying experience we had during the test of courage because we went somewhere we shouldn't have as well? I got so scared that I ran to my grandmother's room and told her everything that happened the day before, from going to the beach and the mountain, and even the test of courage. She looked at me with fear in her eyes and told me that I should just keep reading the sutras for today. My grandfather looked fed up, but he said, "I'm glad you came back safely." The three of us continued to read sutras until midnight. Then we had a late dinner, and while we were eating, I asked my grandfather why our village had a rule that we couldn't go near the ocean or mountains during Obon. I also asked if that was why I had the terrifying experience during our test of courage, because we went somewhere we shouldn't have. He said that he had always been told the same thing, and while he did ask the reason long ago, he apparently couldn't remember it well now. To summarize, there was a special belief for something in our village, and Obon for us didn't mean the same thing it did in Shinto or regular Buddhism, but it was something special, and our people didn't have a good relationship with the mountain and ocean kami. He said to ask at the temple if I wanted to know more. I don't know whether your scary experience was directly related to visiting the ocean and mountain, though. Anyway, I'm just glad you came back safe. My grandmother nodded in agreement as he spoke. Anyway, first thing tomorrow, you should go to the temple, she said. But if your phone alarm didn't go off, then you would have been in trouble, right? My father said. A chill ran down my spine. He was right. What would have happened to the five of us if my alarm hadn't gone off? I don't know why I set that alarm, but I'm sure glad I did. Thinking about it, I set the alarm for 11 because of the particular superstition unique to our village, and I knew I'd get in big trouble if I broke that. I set the alarm so that they wouldn't find out that I was camping, and so that I wouldn't get in trouble. So, if that superstition didn't exist in the first place, if the scary experience we had nothing to do with us visiting the beach and the mountain, I got chills, but at the same time, I felt protected by that superstition that our village had passed on. My friends and my friend's brother were all purified, and apparently nothing unlucky has happened to them since. My friend's brother is now happily married. I visited a temple the very next day and was purified as well. I then spent the whole day chanting sutras at the temple too. Nothing much has happened to me since then, and I'm doing just fine at university. Don't forget to check out Bankai, Baffling Japanese Internet Mysteries Volume 3, out on Amazon right now. And check out our newly revamped merchandise store at koobana.store. And if you'd like to chat about this week's stories, come and join us in the Koobana Discord. You can find that link in the description or on koobana.net. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TaraA Devlin for exclusive bonus stories and extras, or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/kawabanajapan for all sorts of Japanese horror you won't find anywhere else. Thanks, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you again next time for even more Kawabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Want even more scary stories? Head over to kawabana.net for new translations every week. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to kawabana.net now.